allegation from the FNDG, and I would want to indicate that I have with me the DDGs from the different branches of the department here, and also the CEOs of the public entities, Weather Services, Dr. Makuleni, South African Tourism, Mr. Musola, Tourism Grading Council, Ms. Kunene, and South African National Parks, Dr. Mabunda, and the DDG BNC, which is Mr. Mketeni, as well as Dr. Mayeki, so are at an international conference on biological diversity, and the minister is joining them later this week. But they are represented by Sydney Saudi from Sandparks as the COO, and then Ms. Abrams from Sandy is represented by Mr. Chris Willow. And then Isimanga Lisa Wetland Park CEO, Mr. Zaluma, is here. And I would therefore, as discussed with the chair, one of the members, quickly run through the DIT overall strategic plan that is going to be tabled to the NCOP by the minister and the deputy minister, and thereafter I'll allow the CEOs of the public entities or their proxies to then give short presentations on their strategy. If you allow me, then can I proceed, Chair? Honourable members, the DIT strategic plan, as you had recommended it for adoption in Parliament last year, it had a vision, and that vision has not changed. And further, in terms of the presentation, I'll just outline the program that the department is running, and those programs are the programs that we have in allocation for the National Treasury on. And the APEX priorities, which are priorities of government, and then the actual strategy and how we can be measured in respect of achieving the implementation of that strategy, and then the finances. The DIT vision is a prosperous and equitable society living in harmony with its natural resources, and that vision has not changed, as I indicated earlier on. And the programs under the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, both 27 are six. Program one being administration and support, which is more, it covers the work of the ministry, the deputy ministry, the DG, corporate affairs, which includes communications and legal services, and as well as information and management, or IT. And then program two, environmental quality and protection, which is the branch that's led by Ms. Yawich, responsible for the various programs, the sub-programs, environmental impact management, air quality management and climate change, environmental enforcement, compliance and risk management. And under that program, we make transfers to weather services, South African Weather Services, which will then make a presentation later on. Program three is marine and coastal management, which relates to the management of the coast as well as fisheries management functions, including research and compliance and enforcement under the Marine Living Resources Fund. And then program four, tourism development and promotion, which under that program we transfer funds to South African Tourism, which is our marketing arm, and the Tourism Grading Council of South Africa, the Tourism Enterprise Program, and the Tourism Empowerment Program, which is the DEE code implementation arm of the department. Under Program 5, Biodiversity Conservation, which focuses more within the branch of who's not here today. Tourism is led by DDG Cindy Sumayo, which I just forgot to indicate earlier on, member. And she is here. And then on Biodiversity and Conservation, Ms. Mketeni, and we transfer funds to South African National Park, and the CEO is Dr. Mabunda, and she's represented by Mr. Saudi, as I earlier said. then biodiversity institute, which is SANDI in our short abbreviation, and as well as and that is represented by Mr. Wills now today, and then we have Isimangali Wetland Park, which is what was initially called Great Sandusha Wetland Park. And then under program 6 is sector services and international relations, which relates to functions of business performance and covers implementation of the Expanded Public Works Program and planning and coordination under the Chief Operating Officer. The department's strategy that is being tabled will remember is a revised strategy from what we had presented here last year. And it took into account external and internal environmental factors, and in terms of making sure that we look at areas of improvement and consolidation. And those are based on the key priorities of government as per the medium-term strategic framework and the outcomes of the January cabinet Lekota and the broad government program of action, which also includes the APEX priorities. As you might also appreciate, honorable members, this is the last term of the current government, and therefore, as a department, we are not presenting major changes to our strategic plan. We're just making minor adjustments that stick to make sure that we sharpen our focus and ensure that we just improve the implementation. And in respect of the APEX priorities, the slide that is indicated there does highlight which APEX priorities and the role of the department. And we report through the cluster system, fostered cluster system, either the economy cluster or the social cluster or the international relations, or which is called PS cluster. And the one that deals with the security, that's the security cluster, and basically, and including government, we just indicated how then our strategy talks to those key priorities of government, and the specific ones that are highlighted in blue are those particular areas where we are reporting through the cluster system. The others are just linkages which are part of our normal business. In terms of the National Industrial Policy Framework of the Department of Trade and Industry, the cluster or the economic cluster has adopted an Industrial Policy Action Plan, which then includes our work as a department in tourism growth and development, as well as marine aquaculture development and including climate change policy development. And then the next blue that's highlighted there is the implementation of intense campaigns on energy security, and our work in terms of environmental quality and protection branch deals with the air quality initiatives, air quality management, and climate change initiatives. Then in respect of the next slide, in implementing special crime combating initiatives, which is a program of action of the security cluster, the department, our work around marine compliance and surveillance measures then fit into that. And the next APEX priority where we report in the cluster system is the intensification of economic diplomacy, which is involved the Department of this public entity as a tourism in respect of global tourism marketing or our international marketing work. And the reporting also in respect of our transfrontier conservation areas, which is what we call the TFCA program, which is a SADC program that is looking at expanding our protected areas a network and where we want to have a boundless protected area. All of our members, as I've indicated, I'm not going to dwell on the other priorities, but those are all the other priorities that we reflect our work on as an organization. In respect of the goals and strategic objectives, in our strategic plan, we had previously a five goals, and now those five goals have been consolidated as one goal, which is delivering on our mandate. So the core business of the department is outlined in those strategic objectives on this slide, and that then includes promotion of the sector transformation and job creation. And the left goals, growing and learning, a learning organization built on human capital foundation, have been identified as missing. That's why that slide has got highlights of blue. And this is to make sure that we pursue it as an employer of choice. And the left goal on operational efficiency and relevance in the information age is making sure that we pursue ourselves as a department that enhancing service delivery and improving on systems in respect of the fact that we are mainly producing data, concepts, and environmental information that should enhance our ability to improve knowledge management within the organization. In respect of financial responsibility and accountability, we would want to promote equitable and sound corporate and cooperative governance and make sure that we continue to achieve a clean audit report from the Auditor General. In respect of empowerment, in information sharing, and sound management of our stakeholders, we want to enhance our reputation and collective ownership of the services that we provide as a department. And now I will go into each of the branches and how then they relate to those strategic objectives and the goals. Starting with tourism, the strategic objective there is the creation of conditions for sustainable tourism growth and development. And the key performance areas that fall under this one, the first KPA relates to ensuring competitiveness of SA tourism sector. And the key performance indicators then relate to how we would be measured if we were to then, if we have achieved those key performance areas, or we have made that contribution to the strategic objective as highlighted above. We will be measured through the skills levels in the tourism sector, and we also have targets for 2008-09. In our strategic plan that we are tabling, we've also indicated our targets for the outer years. But on the slides that I'm presenting now, I've just indicated what our targets are for 2008 and 2009. And honourable members, I'm not going to read them. If you can bear with me in that, just to make sure that I don't waste a lot of time. And then the next KPI is the quality of tourism products and services. And both these KPIs relate to also the fact that SA Tourism and the Grading Council, as well as the Tourism Enterprise Program, contributes to. In respect of the quality of the tourism products and services, the grading work would then contribute in that regard. And then in ensuring the next slide, which still continues on the competitiveness of South African tourism sector, still KPA number one, this relates the indicators here and the output relate to our partnerships with key departments like Home Affairs, Foreign Affairs, Safety and Security, and as well as DTI. And this is more about unblocking so that we ensure that our environment is competitive for growing our economy and in particular the tourism sector. KPI number one relates to the reduction of an improvement of accessibility for portfolio and priority markets, both international as well as the domestic market. And the second KPI relates to product development in terms of ensuring that there are investments that support the growth of the tourism sector, and that is the work that we do in partnership with DTI. The next KPA relates to maximizing tourism potential for 2010 FIFA World Cup in ensuring that 2010 leaves the legacy and environmental legacy that's based on sustainability principles. We have KPI on bringing 2010 FIFA World Cup and making sure that we implement the 2010 tourism plan and also establish a tourism ambassador program, which would help us to have individuals, about 500 ambassadors, that would communicate facts and information about our country and the products in particular within both cities, and encourage visitors to look forward to having a good time in our country as they visit during 2010. And KPA number 3 relates to sustainably growing the tourism sector, and the KPI there is the tourism enterprise development, which relates to the support that we provide through the tourism enterprise program to our SMEs within the tourism sector. The next strategic objective, then I'm now stepping off tourism and focusing on the biodiversity and conservation and fisheries management branches of the department. The first strategic objective relates to promoting the conservation and sustainable utilization of the natural resources and enhancing economic growth and poverty eradication. KPA number 1 is to ensure equitable and sustainable use of natural resources. This can be measured through the systems to standardize trade and utilization of threatened, protected, or commercial species. The next KPA relates to conserving and mitigating threats to biodiversity. Having put in place measures to manage threats to biodiversity, that's how we will be measured, and also if we then achieve the productivity of ecosystems as outlined in our protected area expansion strategy, which our next community. And then in building a sound scientific base for effective management of natural resources, this is aligned with the work of SANDI and the Marine Living Resources Fund. The KPI is to research a research strategy that supports conservation and sustainable use of biodiversity. And the next KPI relates to a strategic research presence in Antarctic and islands, and that work that MCM particularly focuses on. And this is the work that we undertake also in partnership with the Department of Science and Technology. And then the next area then relates to, next slide please. Environment and quality branch, Ms. Yawich branch, and I would highlight also there in terms of our strategic objective of protecting and improving the quality and safety of the environment, our key performance area number 1 relates to preventing and managing potential negative impacts on the environment, and KPI in terms of how we would measure that. First KPI relates to environmental impact management, and we've got targets that relate to how we look at improving that system. And the integrated coastal zone management deal is the deal that is already in front of Parliament, and we would expect that it will be passed into law in this current financial year. And the next KPA relates to ensuring compliance with environmental legislation. KPI number 1 is compliance monitoring system, and this is the work that relates to green scorpions in the department and how then the work on investigations would be stepped up in this current year and going forward within the MTF. And we're looking at also an indicator that relates to protected areas, performance management system, as well as environmental and law enforcement system. And this, in essence, is compliance work across the branches of the organization. And we hope that we'll be able to facilitate the process of unifying our compliance and enforcement work under one unit in future. In respect of preventing and reducing pollution and waste and improve air and atmospheric quality, our key performance indicator relates to waste management system, and the deal on waste management is already presented or tabled to Parliament, and we hope that it will be then approved in the course of this financial year to be a law. And then in KPA number 4 relates to prevent and reduce pollution and waste. including air quality, and is focusing mainly with key performance indicators that relate to air quality management. KPI number one relates to the work that we are undertaking on ambient air quality monitoring and setting up an air quality information system. And this is also the work that we are undertaking in partnership with SA Weather Services. And updating the greenhouse gas inventory, and also further on, I can also indicate that these are the steps that would contribute to a development of the climate change policy for the country. And then KPI number two relates to climate change response measures, and the department has undertaken a process of looking at mitigation measures, and the work that had been presented to Parliament in respect of this, and that work would then be used to inform the climate change policy. And honourable members, if they require further a detailed presentation in respect of the outcomes of the LTMS, the branch environmental quality and protection would be in a position, the DDG, to come and make a presentation to Parliament to give you further details in that regard. The next strategic objective relates to work of international relations and sector transformation, and that is the outreach branch and the COO branch overlapping. And the key strategic objective of promoting a global sustainable development agenda in respect of the KPAs, want to make sure that we effectively manage and facilitate these international relations and engagement. And our key performance indicators relate to the agreements, both multilateral, for multilateral negotiations and bilateral relations, in respect of particular targets that we want to achieve. Once we have mandated positions from cabinet or from the minister in the department, measure whether we have been able to achieve some of those mandated positions when we negotiate internationally. And the next slide relates to total sector transformation in respect of sector transformation and job creation. Here we're looking at the work of the BE Charter and scorecard implementation under the TEXA, which is the Tourism. But it's the Tourism Empowerment Council. And then the next KPA relates to environmental sector transformation. And here we are looking at having a sector scorecard for the environment in respect of possibly the hunting industry. But we will be able to start that process in this new financial year. And going further on the environmental sector programs, we would continue our work on the implementation of the social responsibility program that contributes to the expanded public works way of doing things in respect of making sure that we absorb labor where possible in respect of how we do our business. And infrastructure development, we've got targets there around expenditure in respect of infrastructure, which is infrastructure mainly within our public entities, but that program is run with the department. There is also a key performance indicator around the national youth program, wherein as a department we've outlined our targets in respect of the contribution of our sector to that program that's led by the president. Next slide. And then in respect of the program one, and which is falling under DDG Corporate Affairs, with Ishama Bada, we're targeting human capital and development. If we're saying it is going to be an employer of choice, we want to ensure that we've got adequate human resources. And our key performance indicators relate to talent recruitment and retention, and we've got our targets, which are informed by what we've been able to achieve in the previous year. Over and above that, ensuring employee well-being, implementing HIV/AIDS program and other wellness programs, and ensuring recruitment activity in respect of our profile in the organization. And these targets are also informed by the report that we submit to the Public Service Commission. Then the strategic position on the strategic objective that relates further to the this being an employer of choice. We've been talking about developing a green building, and now we're calling it a new deep building. We hope that we can achieve the actual building of the required building that would ensure a healthy environment for the DIT employees. Currently, if you were to visit our building, you can get sick for yourself on our building. And then in promoting a culture, a positive culture, the department has undertaken a culture audit in the previous financial year, and then starting in this financial year, we then be implementing the recommendation of the culture audit. And in terms of compliance with relevant prescripts, we want to make sure that we comply with the treasury prescripts and make sure we do not have qualified audits. And further, we had adopted, the department had approved a master systems plan in respect of aligning our IT systems and having an IT infrastructure that is able to assist business, internal business processes, as well as also make sure that external stakeholders are able to access this information easily or with relative ease. And we would then be going forward with the implementation of the MSP with phase two, and also looking at the other areas of business efficiency, like reducing energy consumption. Did have undertaken an audit of what energy usage is, and we then are putting forward targets to start reducing our energy use as a department, including reduction of paper use, and we are exploring use of recycled paper, but that is also involved us changing technology, photocopy machines, and so on and so on. And the KPI on aligning and cooperating with our public entities, and the key performance indicators which relate to the implementation of our governance framework, where in the department, the minister and the chairs of the boards have agreed on a governance framework, and as a department, then we manage our relations with the public entities through that instrument. In respect of being efficient and in terms of managing our information, we are looking at the various systems that we have already put in place in line with the master systems plan. And I'm going to go then straight into the budget, the finance section. And we have the slide, that slide, honorable members, reflects the budget allocation for the department and its public entities. As you can see, it starts with from 2004-05 financial year, and the white block or column is 2008-09, which is the current financial year. And the Minister of Finance has allocated to the department the department of 3,061,100,000 with 686 rand. And the next slide just shows how the budget has grown over the years. And the next slide shows economical classification in terms of that indicates which where does the money go in respect of the various categories of the budget in terms of paying people, in respect of compensation of employees, goods and services, transfers and subsidies, and that major amount of money that goes to our public entities and also to various households, and then it's in total to the budget allocation that was on the first slide. And I would then indicate that the next slide, honorable members, just show how we the budget has been allocated across in terms of growing between the various budget line items. Go to the next slide, and the next slide. And then in respect of our public entities, that slide shows how much goes to weather services, to Marine Living Resources Fund, to South African Tourism, South African National Biodiversity Institute, South African National Park, the Wetland Park Authority, and then partly also the Park, the Canadian National Park that still has to be established. And I would want to stop there. Thank you, honorable members, and I will give over to the first CEO to Mr. Bono. Honourable Chairperson, honourable members of Parliament, Acting DG, CEOs of public entities, colleagues, good morning. I can see that the technology is failing us at the moment, but we have also circulated the presentation to the members. I will then, should I wait for a few minutes? Thank you very much, Bunabisi. My presentation, members, I'll try and utilize the 10 minutes that I have. And the topics will be looking at the 7 issues there. Next one, please. Honorable members, looking at the vision of the organization, to be a world-class meteorological organization that contributes to the sustainable development of South Africa and beyond our borders. And in that, honorable members, we are putting emphasis to the SADC region and the continent also as well. In terms of our mission, is to collect, process, and provide meteorological data, products, and services for the use of all South Africans and beyond our borders. We will achieve that through excellence in focusing processes, cutting-edge technology, assessing international observation networks, research and innovation, and facilitating cooperation with regards to observation networks. Next one. Looking at the enterprise, you honorable member, in the next 3 years, our strategic plan is to put emphasis on the end user, making sure that we meet the requirements and the needs of the end user and to ensure that we satisfy them. If you look at what we need to do in the next 3 years, the red part at the top is looking at corporate governance and strategic leadership. And when you talk about corporate governance, it's key to ensure that we also do not have qualified audits. We have the corporate governance structures in place and also playing a leadership role also in the SADC region and ensure that we've got compliance as well. Looking at the core function of the institution, honorable members, the areas that we'll be putting a lot of emphasis with our strategies is to ensure that we've got the observation networks. They are installed, they are also maintained, and looking at observation and data acquisition, protecting that data, and using that data to come up with information and products that are useful for the different departments within the government, the public as large, and specifically BEAT. For example, looking at climate and air quality information services. And the other area that we are paying a lot of attention, members, is to ensure that we provide accurate, focusing information and severe warnings to ensure that the communities are actually protected, and provide that information on time, working very closely with the disaster management. And the other area that we will be paying attention in the next few years is providing a product specific for different industries and packaging it differently and coming up with the necessary applications, for example, for departments like agriculture, departments like water affairs. And to be in a position to do that, we will be paying attention on research and development, and also ensuring that as we develop our infrastructure, we pay emphasis on information and communication technology. Next, please. Honorable members, this is the structure of the organization that we have put in place to ensure that we are able to implement the strategy. Some of the key areas that I will highlight out of the structure, which were actually not there before, one of the areas that we're going to be putting a lot of emphasis is the Department of Climate, so that we are in a position to respond to the needs of the country and working very closely with it on climate change issues and also on research in that regard. The other area that we're going to be paying attention to is to try and grow our commercial side of the business, and we are putting in place a structure there that will be supporting that strategy. The other area that I would like to put some emphasis on, looking at the projects themselves, we are introducing a total quality management. We are planning to be accredited in 3 years' time, and that will assist us in terms of information management and also looking, monitoring the quality of the services that we provide to the people out there. The other area that we are putting a lot of emphasis is human capital development. We will be able to achieve that to ensure that there is long-term sustainability of South African water service for us and also for the future generations. We're looking at the five pillars. One of the pillars is the financial controls and ensure that we adhere to the PFMA and other related legislation and federal regulations by also getting an unqualified audit members. The other governing acts that we need to be paying attention to, of course, the South African Water Service Act and the other acts, like the Disaster Management Act. Looking at corporate governance, these are some of the initiatives that we are planning to also enhance to ensure that they are always in place. One of the areas, members, as we grow the commercial side of our business, we are planning to put more emphasis and stringent management of our commercial contracts. Looking at the other area, the employment equity, to ensure that we build a capacity of black scientists within the institution. We also have international obligations, honorable members. For example, with the World Meteorological Organization, we are a member of the World Meteorological Organization, and we also have an executive council within the WMO, which means we are a board member of the WMO. So these are some of the structures that we're going to be using. And I think, honorable members, the other area that I would like to share with the members is our role within the SADC region. We have just established a Meteorological Association of Southern Africa, which is called MASA, and South Africa is the secretariat. These are some of the bodies that we'll actually use to ensure that we build capacity within the region and also looking at the necessary infrastructure, because the weather knows no boundaries. Next one, please. Looking at the strategic objectives, honorable members, we've identified five as a collective at Water Service. One of the areas is financial viability and sustainability. Number two, becoming customer-centric. Number three, a learning organization. Number four, a reputable provider of services. And looking at corporate governance and leadership. Key objectives that we're going to be looking at activities is to grow the commercial revenue. And the other area, members, seeing that there are a number of questions that are also asked around the climate change and also looking at the weather itself, We are planning to put a lot, trying to get also funds to grow the RMC funding so that we do spend a little bit of money on our RMC. And looking also at the infrastructure, the capital expenditure, and engage members, we need to effectively utilize the government grant. With the customers, our emphasis in this coming year is to look at dissemination of the product services to following clients and coming up with customer-specific projects for different government departments, for the public as well, aviation industry, weather service-related industries like the insurance industry, tourism as well, and other industries as well. But we're also going to be paying a lot of attention in terms of our relationship with other international bodies. As I've mentioned, members, we are planning to have an ISO accreditation in the next 3 years. As a learning organization, members, one of the areas that has been a challenge, not for only South African Weather Service, but for most of the science-based institutions, is to build and have and retain scientists and technologists and researchers within different institutions. This is one of the areas that we're going to be paying a lot of attention. And one area that we feel as an organization is very important is the IT area, which we'll also be paying attention to. The other area, the other emphasis that we're going to be putting on in the next 3 years is to become an accredited regional meteorological training center. Looking at reputable provider of services, we'll continue to make sure that we upgrade our infrastructure so that we meet the needs of our end users. And within the corporate governance, we are planning to play a critical role in the SADC region and also looking at aviation. The next one. Just a snapshot of some of the preliminary results, which are not yet audited. As we move forward, these are some of the areas we always go back and look at what is it that as an organization we are doing. These are some of the preliminary results, members, that I will not really pay put a lot as I'm actually worried about the time, as we will come back and present these results to the members. As we're moving forward, we compare what we have now achieved and also what we think we're going to be doing in the next 3 years. Listen, just to highlight, members, the key strategies that we're looking at, our acting DG, she has mentioned that we are also partnering with them in terms of the air quality information system. We are the key players with this, and also implementation of total quality management. The other areas, looking at research itself, research and development, looking at climate change related research, air quality forecasting, trace gas measurement through the global atmospheric watch, severe weather forecasting program to ensure that we provide the necessary information on time. The next one, the next slide, looking at the flooding, where we work with the disaster management, and looking at modernization plan, the upgrade of our lightning detection network, and also looking at our observation, automatic weather station and rain station, and looking at upgrade of the upper air sounding. The other area that I've mentioned them is the master. We believe that Weather Service will play a critical role when it comes to 2010. These are some of the other areas that we're going to be paying a lot of attention. Development of critical mass of black scientists. Coming to the equity, look, what we are planning to do in the next 3 years is to put more emphasis on the core, looking at the scientists and researchers. Looking at Africans, we want to move from 41% to 45% mayors and 25% from 23 to 26. Looking at professionals, moving from 17 to around 20%. And moving from 7 to 10%. That is the area that we'll be putting more emphasis. You may pass those on. This is the distribution of the total employees within the organization. Coming to the financials, 2008-2009, the grant is around 124 million rand. The regulated commercial income, around 55 million, and non-regulated, we're planning to move from 10 to 20 to 21, and these are the projections for the next coming years. That is on a graphic presentation. We are planning to move move closer in terms of if you compare the grants, the revenue, and the commercial revenue that we'll be generating. Looking at the cost, employee cost, we are planning to maintain the employee cost at around 50% of our total cost. Next, please. Looking at capital expenditure, we'd like to thank the department for providing us with the 240 million rand budget over the next 4 years to upgrade and our radar network. This is how we project to spend the money over the next 4 years. And within our own funding within Weather Service, we project that in the next 3 years, we'll be spending 18, 16, and 14 billion rand upgrading the weather stations, the rain station, the weather boards, upper air sounding, etc. With those few slides, members, I'd like to thank you.
Acting DG, thank you very much. The Honourable Chairman and other Honourable Members of the Select Committee, good morning. The detailed presentation has been included in the pack, so I'll try to move as fast as possible, Chairperson, with your permission, just highlighting the most important thing. This graph just shows that tourism continues to grow quite well. We reached over 9 million in 2007. This person just puts the growth in the world context. In the world, tourism grew by 6.1%. We grew by 8.3%. What was also encouraging members is that January and February this year, tourism was up by 7.5%. In terms of our objectives, 2008 to 2010, is to be able to continue to contribute to GDP, sustainable job creation, redistribution, and transformation. We will do that by really focusing on four strategic objectives. Achieve the targeted arrival, which I'll share with the members, focus on spend, and really making sure that our brand continues to grow as we go towards 2014, and really to make sure that the organization continues to really do good work. Chairperson, just to remember members that we have selected markets where we play very, very in a focused way, and also based on the choices that we have made, that's how we allocate the resources. The core markets, that's where 60% of our resources goes. The blue, about 20%. The green, additional 20%. The watch list market is where we really know where the growth is going to come in the future, so we are actually really monitoring those. The first objective, at the end of the day, people have to arrive. That's really the first objective in terms of achieving annual arrival targets. As members can see for this year, 2008, 9.699 is the target. That is about 6.7% increase over 2007. And as you can see, we believe that we'll be able to do that. But we also indicate to members, in 2009, we were at 10.2, and 2010, 11.4. The second objective is to spend. When people arrive in South Africa, they have to spend their money. That's why we're in the business of tourism. And those are some of the targets that we have. Just focusing on 2008, at least per trip, we are targeting 7,300 per travel. Objective number three, South Africa to be the most preferred tourism brand by 2014. People make choices based on the brand. We have to continue to stay strong and up in the minds of the consumer. So this effect, Jefferson, last weekend, in fact, during the World Test Tourism Awards, South African tourism was announced as the best tourism market authority on the African continent. Indaba was announced as the best exhibition in the world. So, Jefferson, we're quite excited about that. I think it's about continuing to make sure that we reach our own target. The fourth one, SA Tourism to be the best organization by 2010. I think the DG highlighted that. It's about focusing on people, making sure that we get the skilled people and we keep them from a retention point of view. Jefferson, in terms of the work, I thought I'd just give the committee member a sense of the work that is going into the market in 2008-2009. We're going to be focusing, Jefferson, on the value of the story. We've just completed the research that tells us that the most important thing for people who are living in South Africa is the stories that they actually have when they live here. Those stories make these people to be our ambassadors. So it is how we capture them and make sure that they are told correctly internationally. These stories are about our people at the center, our natural and physical environment, and of course our culture and our history. And it is those experiences that we try to sell in the international market. We will be focusing also around, as I said, at the center of it is our people, but nature is important, the cuisine, the scenic beauty of the country, the urban experiences, outdoor and adventure, and of course, culture travel. We are already, some members will have seen that the destination is now on BBC, so CNN, National Geographic, Eurosport, and News Corp, and we will be going very aggressively for the next 2 years. Chairperson, we'll just go quickly. These are some of the picks that are already going into the market. They are already included in the pack. We can just continue pressing. That is the focus on Africa. Let's continue. Oh, you're going a little bit fast. Chairperson, one of the most important elements of this portfolio committee, it is continue to make sure that we encourage South Africans to travel in their own country. It's just to say that Shortlift continue to be the campaign that we run in this area. These are some of the picks that we'll be doing that. We have been able to do, we have also been able to form a partnership with Kulula.com, which really now encourages South Africans to travel and really in an affordable way. That is also part of our domestic market. This is just a list of the international television channels that we're going to be doing work. Chairperson, just to highlight very few, in terms of the challenges, Chairperson, the major challenge of the season is the perception of South Africa as an unsafe destination. I must say that the events of the last few days, Chairperson, do not help at all, as a matter of fact, especially given the fact that 67% of our receipts come from the region. So we are quite really concerned about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The next presentation is Tim Lennon, Training Council. That actually
the Tourism Grading Council needs to conduct a comprehensive review looking at the various aspects. I mean, after 6 years of operation, it's important to get to an understanding whether is the Grading Council working, how is it working, what are the successes, what are the challenges, and to basically find a way forward. So we've appointed consultants to assist us in looking at the actual grading criteria, the grading categories, because that's also one of the big challenges. We can grade an establishment from 1 star to 5 star, and we have 8 different categories. So that gives you 40 different criteria out there in the marketplace. So it provides a challenge when it comes to not only educating the public, but also to managing expectations. We need to look at institutional arrangements, infrastructure arrangements, funding arrangements, and of course the legal environment in which the grading council operates. The idea here is to provide the minister with a report at the next MINMEC, which is the 20th of June. So the consultants are working flat out at this point across the system. I've consolidated onto one slide our specific objectives and measures due to time constraints. Suffice to say that for this coming financial year, we're going to ensure that we grade at least 1,500 new properties, and on an annual basis for the next 5 years, we see a 6% increase. Again, taking into consideration the importance of maintaining quality while chasing the numbers or chasing the targets. We're looking at renewing these 5,600 properties. As far as universal accessibility grading is concerned, we're looking at grading at least a minimum of 45 properties to 100. Our client feedback management system, we've spent a lot of money this past year and also this coming year in the chair to make sure that we come up with an effective system that helps us to manage not just the public education, but also come up with proper management statistics, so we can know where our challenges are and address those appropriately. We have a public education program. Here, we want to take as many opportunities as possible to make sure that we educate the public as to how the Grading Council works and what are the different categories and what they as consumers have rights to in terms of giving us feedback and the records that they have. And the last one is around green grading, and I'm not sure if the acting DG is going to talk to it, but the Grading Council, together with Kundalini, has been tasked with leading this project, so coming up with green grading scheme within the tourism sector. And then we're looking at perhaps launching it by the end of 2009. Currently, we have a national technical committee that's been formed, looking at developing the various criteria. And you also have a national steering committee that will provide the guidance. And it is through that committee that we will be able to launch that. Objectives, Mr. Chair, they lie on our foundation of making sure that we provide quality assessment. And if I can just unpack what the quality assessment means, for us, it largely focuses on 5 things. And the first one, obviously, we're focusing on corporate governance and prudent financial management, which is very important. Secondly, training and development. It is absolutely imperative that not only our own employees, but the assessors are trained. The third one, obviously, is focusing on quality standards and making sure that we don't drop our standards. Client feedback system is very, very important for us, as well as, lastly, international benchmarking. So that's what quality assessment means to the Grading Council. So when we look at assistance required from members, there's a number of things that we would like to focus on. And, the first one, Mr. Chair, you'll remember, this was the last time I interacted with you in this very room, asking for assistance around the universal accessibility. We need to, the big question that we as South Africans need to ask ourselves is how accessible are tourism establishments in South Africa, And what really do we have to say about buildings that are not really accessible to the disabled, as far as tourism accommodation establishments are concerned? From the Grading Council side, we have recognized the importance of accessibility to tourists of all kinds. We have a system in place, and that is a UA grading system. But at the same time, we're saying that this cannot really succeed without the requisite regulatory environment. We require assistance there. In terms of green grading, between ourselves and Indalea to be leading this project, but at the same time, we would like assistance from your side to say that as a consumer of accommodation establishments, it is important for people to ask what the status of the accommodation establishment is. And that will use South Africa really towards environmental friendliness. The next aspect is regarding the various provinces in South Africa. The municipal bylaws in different provinces, they differ, and therefore promoting tourism establishments differently. So again, in terms of making sure that there's alignment in a consistent manner in terms of developing, that is a challenge for us. Client feedback, we urge everybody to please make sure that they do give us the feedback whenever they stay the establishment. For us, this is a very, very important aspect, Mr. Chair, going forward. And we have installed innovative technology. We've moved now to the cell phone technology. We're using SMS technology. If you SMS the word down to 31649, then you begin to interact with us and let us know how your experience was at any particular establishment. And this is very important feedback for us because we'll begin to be able to then manage quality across the country in a consistent manner 364 days of the year. Support from government, again, this is a key aspect. There was a current decision taken to say that all government departments only use graded establishments. But to date, not all departments use graded establishments, and we know that. And here, the challenge is to make sure that this performance or the use of graded establishments by government departments is measured and reported on by the various governments. We have a very robust database, and we will be able to verify this information. This will make it easier for us to sell grading to the various establishments, bearing in mind that grading is a voluntary system in South Africa. So we need to really make it quite a tangible benefit for people to be graded. And this is the only way that we should be able to really ensure sustainability of the Grading Council. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting DG, and honorable members. Thanks for the opportunity. Acting DG has already expressed apologies from the CEO. I'm representing him, and I'm going to present just two slides. But before I do that, just to contextualize why two slides. And we do believe that an organization is a reflection of a lot of work that happens, and that in the end, the tip of the iceberg is what we need to share with you, but that what is under the surface is actually not at the stage important for you to look at. As a result, I'm going to present two slides, starting with this particular one. Critical to this is the belief that corporate governance is a fundamental part of any organization. The ability to deliver by an organization is a reflection of its corporate values, its code of ethics, and indeed risk management in general. So what you see in terms of our indicator is but just one important aspect that is a reflection of all the issues that I've just shared with you. And our target is to have an unqualified report and to go further to say that with no letters of emphasis, in the year that we have just started. The organization has three core deliverables, one of those being biodiversity conservation and cultural heritage assets conservation. It also has tourism as well as constituency building, or what we call people and conservation, as three core deliverables by the organization. So starting off with conservation. Our strategic objective is to expand the national park system, so we'll continue to focus on that specific aspect, giving attention to under-conserved biomes that we need to bring into the national park system. For the current year, 2008-09, we're targeting 12,800 hectares to be brought into the national park system. As far as the other strategic objective within that particular major deliverable, we want to manage for sustainability of biodiversity and cultural heritage assets. You will see that in terms of the performance indicators, there's one big element called National Biodiversity Framework, which is a reflection of the program of works of the CBD, but also a reflection of the national imperative in terms of sustaining biodiversity conservation in the country. So all that is encaptured into one specific program. Our aim is to improve the assessments that we have just done in the year that has passed in terms of our ability to manage those aspects by 5% from what we have measured for every park that we have under national park system. We also focus on cultural heritage. The same has been done in the year that has just passed. We've done an assessment, and we have baseline reports per park that has a specific heritage asset that it looks after. Again, there, the ability for us to improve our management focus by 5% from the current year. Next slide, please. The constituency building side of people and conservation, three specific strategic objectives: to improve environmental education, and there we're focusing on learners. We call on learners and organize them to be exposed to the national park system, and in particular to our programs in terms of biodiversity conservation and cultural heritage. We are targeting 110,000 learners. The next one is our facilitation of socio-economic development through all the programs that we undertake, including expanded public works programs. Our target or measure is in relation to the present days of temporary jobs that we create through those programs. Our target is 325,000. And then there's obviously the other aspects of procurement through SMMEs. And there we have achieved in the current, or the year that has just passed, 57%. We're increasing that to 60% in 2008-09. We also have a strategic objective to promote access to benefits from the national park system, which relates to the sustainable use of resources that we look after. And we have a number of projects currently that are going. Our focus in the next year is to pick 7 specific flagship projects that we can use as a best practice resource use project in the country. The last big element of our deliverable is tourism. We want to grow revenue, including alternative sources of revenue. And we do that through the gross operating revenue. We want to grow the current achieved revenue of just over $500 million. We have, by the way, in the year that has just passed, subject to budget, for the first time gone beyond $500 million of self-generated revenue by the organization. We want to grow that by 11%. Provide value for money nature-based experiences. An indication of how well we're doing there is really by people that occupy our facilities and our activities. And as a result, we want to grow the current occupancy. amongst the best in the country in terms of hospitality services industry, to 71%. And as you can see, units sold 507,600, and camping nights sold, or other peasant nights sold 590,000. And people who get engaged in our activities, including night drives and the like, 230,000. We also want to increase the total number of visitors. Our current number of visitors is just below 5 million, 4.7 million, which is inclusive of just about 800,000 of visitors that go up and down Table Mountain through our concessioned cableway operation. We want to increase that by 2%. And a very important aspect is the promotion of access to national parks. We want to increase the domestic black visitor numbers by 10% of overall visitors that come to our parks, but also those who sleep overnight by another 10%. As I've indicated, Chair, this is just the tip of the iceberg. The rest of what goes under in order to produce this is in the pack. Thanks.
Honourable Chair, the next presentation is South African National Biodiversity Institute by Mr. Chris Will.
There's another folder. In the middle of the screen, there's another presentation. Chairperson, honourable members of the select committee, I'd like to also just apologise for the absence of the Sandy CEO. She's currently in London attending the Chelsea Flower Show, and I'd like to announce that we have our 29th gold medal this year's Flower Show. We also got the President's Award for the most gracious exhibit on the show, so we're very happy. The 29th medal, gold medal in 33 exhibits since 1976. Honourable members, I'm just going to go over the some of the overview of my presentation. We have over the last couple of months been going through a process of revising the vision, mission, goals and structure of the organisation with the new CEO for Sandy in place towards the end of last year. I'll be looking at the Sandy Way, strategic objectives, outputs and also areas requiring special support. The revised vision for Sandy is to have biodiversity richness for all South Africans. That is our vision, which we're working towards achieving. The mission is to champion the exploration, conservation, sustainable use, appreciation, enjoyment of South Africa's exceptionally rich biodiversity for all people. We have, Honourable Chair, the goals that you have in your present, your pack, I think are slightly different to the ones I've got up on the screen. We have done some cutting of our goals to reduce them to now 5, and they're all on the screen now as we scroll through them. First of all, to have effective framework, networks and leadership for generating, managing and disseminating biodiversity knowledge. To be the leader for coordinating and communicating the country's response to the bio impact of climate change. Specifically the impact of climate change on our biodiversity in this country, and to be a leader in the development of cooperative biodiversity programs, best practice models and conservation state management, to be a vibrant and transformed biodiversity employer of choice, and finally to be the recognized strategic partner in human capital development for biodiversity science. Just to give some idea of the sort of value chain perspective, starting at the foundation level where you start with research, that feeds then into certain models and mainstreaming various pilot projects, testing of those models and so on. That then leads into various products, outputs and services, which can then in turn feed into various networks, economics, report, data systems, and monitoring. Honourable members, this is a revised view of the organisational structure for SANDI. We have put in an additional layer, apart from the divisions which are in the bottom boxes on the screen. We have DGG level positions for biodiversity research portfolio management, biodiversity knowledge policy and network management, and as well as conservation estate management corporate services. And the various divisions beneath that, I will be looking at in more detail just now, having a look at what are their sort of projected goals and for the current financial year. Remember, this is basically the approach that SANDI is working with. The SANDI way is essentially towards the managed network. We want to work with organizations out there, existing organizations. We want to partner with them in various networks and linkages for developing certain outputs. So we will identify certain research priorities together with DEEP and other organizations. We'll set broad biodiversity research frameworks with other public entities. We will then harness the national biodiversity research capacity and then also provide focus for other institutions and NGOs working in the biodiversity sector. And this will then lead to publicizing information, raising funds for identified research, and to really foster a network of South African institutions and to build a strong knowledge network for biodiversity in this country. This is an example of a tool which we could be used for managed network, where you have on the left-hand column various aspects such as research, curation, data management, monitoring, reporting, different aspects of research such as molecular, tissue, genetics, curation of different groups. Now on the columns represent the different biodiversity groups, going from plants to mammals, fish, reptiles, amphibians, insects and arachnids. So basically this can be then populated with information for each biodiversity group, and the different organizations that are working in those various cells can then be populated. There's also just another tool that we can use to communicate the bioregional and ecosystem work, where you're looking at various biomes within the country, going from the pony felt up in the north, down to grassland in the central parts of the country, down to the Fynbos and Western Cape and Sakhalin Crew further northwest. Just delving now into some of the divisions within SANDI and what we plan to look at over the next year. We plan to develop a national biodiversity research strategy, a GMO research program to establish. Also to basically get the scientific authority operational in terms of member, and also to develop a sustainable use program. In terms of climate change and bioadaptation division, we're looking at producing the second national communications program for the United Nations framework for climate change, also to strengthen the bioadaptation research program within SANDI. Biosystematics, we're looking at initiating an animal taxonomy program. We have quite a comprehensive plant taxonomy program, and as part of our expanded mandate within biodiversity, we can look at developing the animal taxonomy program. Also develop a national strategy for natural history collections, and that incorporates museums and herbaria in the country. And also to progress certain floristic inventories that we've initiated in different parts of the country, to complete Angolan checklist for plants, and also to collaborate with other partners in preparing an electronic identification manual for African plants. The Biodiversity Planning and Mainstreaming Unit of SANDI plans to produce and identify the ecosystems within South Africa that are under threat. We also will be launching the National Grasslands Program later this week in the Wafa-Sudu Garden in Gauteng. Also, we're initiating the Freshwater and Marine Program, doing a cost analysis for the implementation of National Protected Area Expansion Strategy. And also, one of the, I think, a very useful element will be the implementing the Municipal Biodiversity Program in partnership with the DPLG. That is linked to a capacity building program around biodiversity for the municipality, and we're producing various outputs that can be used by different municipalities around the country to assist them with managing their biodiversity. One of the products will be the first state of biodiversity report that will be developed, and that was also linked to NEMBA. We'll also be producing and initiating a red list project for fish, and to complete the red list project that was initiated a few years back on reptiles. We also have within our organization the Working for Wetlands program, which is essentially an EPWP program. And we will be rehabilitating 95 wetlands this year across the country, essential habitats for the source of water for the country. And various jobs will be created through that and SMEs employed. Through the policy development support, we're providing bi-regional programs and plans we'll be implementing in various parts of the country. Also developing a list of threatened ecosystems and providing technical support to the redrafting process for the Invasive Alien Species Regulation. Also looking at possible incentives for biodiversity management around and working together with National Treasury around environmental fiscal reform. Knowledge okay. Information management, one of those aspects will be looking at the expansion of online access to biodiversity data. Hosting a virtual museum, which is essentially web-based information where you can access certain information around biodiversity and contribute, as the members of the public can contribute to some of the conservation assessments that we're currently busy with. We'll also be looking at expanding the biodiversity GIS system, which is essentially an electronic system where you can access information about biodiversity at any level. This is just an example. You're going to scroll this through. This is an example from the current system that we have. We're doing a decision support system for biodiversity. So you can select certain information at a municipal level. You could focus in on certain areas of the country. And if you're looking at, you can get various reports based on certain layers of information. And get reports as well, and lists of plants, for example, lists of red listed animals, mammals, and give you links to Google Earth. We can actually get an aerial view of this landscape taken from the satellite. Right, so nearly finished the Conservation Gardens and Tourism division. We're looking at expanding the National Botanical Garden Network, which currently is 9, including the National Botanical Garden in Liverpool in the Northern Cape. We'll be looking at expanding that to the Eastern Cape and Limpopo provinces by 2012. We're also looking at a possible expansion of the Harold Porter Garden and the Walter Sisulu Garden to adjacent land, natural areas. And that will actually be contributing to the conservation state for the country. Gardens will be promoted as embassies of biodiversity, education and culture, and as tourism destinations, a nature-based tourism destination. And also, the garden provides ex-situ or off-site conservation areas for plants and those that are affected possibly by climate change. Biodiversity education, we've got various programs currently operational, outreach greening to schools around in different provinces of the country. We've also got sponsored programs through National Lottery to provide transport for learners to get to the Botanical Gardens for curriculum and environmental education program, and also the Greening of the Nation program, where it's greening various schools and municipalities around the country. We're also looking at a new approach to environmental education, looking at a more of a human capital development strategy for the biodiversity sector. Areas of challenge include increasing the black participation in biodiversity and various aspects of biodiversity. We're also looking at increased funding for the very broad mandate that SAMBI has with the Biodiversity Act, and also making gardens more accessible to the majority of our people. Immediate action includes a reshaping of the organogram and refocusing the strategy of SAMBI, breaking down the silo working within the organisation, appointing key high-level staff and also lobbying for more MTF support. Finally, the areas requiring special support include climate change, marine biodiversity program, new gardens in the Eastern Cape, neighborhood greening, and the municipal biodiversity planning support. Thank you.
Thanks. Honourable Member, the next and last presentation is from Isimanga and Historical Centre, Mr. Andrew Gomez.
Chairman, members, officials, I will keep my presentation short for sharp slides. The first slide really just gives our vision and mandate, which is to balance both conservation and development in the context of the next slide, which is the Bigger Lubombo STR project, which is the Swaziland Mozambique's African project. Next slide, please. Progress is implementing the Lubombo, just put up all the bullet points to speed me up, is the roads are nearly complete, borders have been opened, malaria has been sorted and dealt with, and it's been extended an extension of the marine protected area into the north, and World Heritage Site is well underway. Next slide, please. The Lubombo tourism route has been launched. It was mentioned this morning by the Deputy Minister in his speech. If you put up all the slides, that tourism route, if you put up all the bullet points on the slide, is now possible. It wasn't possible at the beginning of this project. Next slide. The medium-term strategy, if you put up all the bullet points, for Isimangaliso itself is well underway and being completed, which effectively is the opening of the park into one open ecological area, supported by the necessary infrastructure, empowerment and job development to secure both economic development for the region and the bigger Lubombo, but also to ensure meaningful development in the area. Next slide, please. This is an extract from our corporate strategy, which members will have seen, effectively setting out our key targets over the next 5 years. Next slide, please. Performance under review, I'll be very quick. I think I just want to highlight three areas. The park name was changed successfully to Isimangaliso. Next slide, please. In terms of land claims, we settled 6 land claims in the last financial year, making it a total of 9 land claims. On New Year's Day, we had over 40,000 visitors to the park as part of our equitable access program. Finally, on the next slide, obviously a clean audit. In our 6th year of operation, we've had 16 audits, and we've increased park revenue this year by 280%. Next slide, please. Focus areas for the year ahead is the brand rollout, concluding on the Cape Vital project, which is a key anchor project for the Lubombo STI and the park, implementation of the People and Parks program for our 9 land claims have been settled, building capacity of our co-managing partners, ensuring equitable access is increased and improved, with the start of 40,000 people getting free access to the park on New Year's Day. Tourism programs, and specifically around education, rolling them out, continuation of our infrastructure rollout, and maintaining our track record of unqualified audits. Thank you.
Honourable Chair and members, this was the last presentation, and I just want to also indicate that we did not provide a presentation for the Tourism BE Council because we do transfer money in that regard. In the year to also is covered in our strategic plan, which is focusing on environmental awareness, and also the Tourism Enterprise Program, which focuses on SME support. And I would therefore say that in conclusion, we extend the opportunity to come and make the presentation. All of these entities and the department strategic plans have been tabled formally by the Minister to the NCOP and the National Assembly. And thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the briefing tonight. It's indeed an overload of information, too much. But that's the position we find ourselves in. I won't waste any time then to create space for the members to look into the brief and have a good brief. Thank you. Honorable Andrea, followed by coming.
Give us some sort of detail on the project of promotion food security in the wetland. How far is that project and how successful is that? Then also the infrastructure. We were in the process of implementing an infrastructure development program there. How far are we on that, and is that included in the this year's budget? And also the project to rehabilitate the park, which is natural and is historical state. How far are they were that, and is that included in the budget? Because then we can go to biodiversity presentation. I'm a bit confused in working for a wetland project. They say that they deployed SMEs there. I think it's one or something like that. Two things. I'm a bit worried about the definition of a SME. Are those entrepreneurs that they have deployed? Or what is it? And then also, this is a bit more concerned about the unfunded mandate that they presented. Yeah, I couldn't, we went too fast to this, and I just want to come back out on that. Chairperson, then, let me start with the department's submission to now, one of the targets they say is to, well, I just want to get to that place, is goals and strategic objective for 2008 to 2011 is financial responsibility and accountable organizations being valued to money. Now, if I recall correctly, the Auditor General made some comments on the last annual report. And I've got the report, I don't want to go into detail, but are they addressing those concerns that was raised by the Auditor General, specifically in the annual report, in the last annual report, the 2006-2007, are they addressing those issues? Then also, I've been asking this question now consistently for 3-4 years now. What's happening to the Taras from Kalahari to Ikraska? They are now busy with it for 5 years. And I think I was on that road in December, and I think they only finished of the 70 kilometers, 20 kilometers. Can they please tell me what is going on and when it's going to finish? And then I want to come to Batu Pele. Chairperson, I think, you know, I'm not sure if the department or the people from Sand Park. I was in Mata Mata at Verifi in December. Came from Namibia to the Mata Mata gate, which was excellent, I must say. It went quick there, and it was quite an experience. I think that will promote tourism. But when I got to Twirafi, they had rain there in Kalahari about a week before I arrived. Then, but, you know, when I got to the swimming pool, it was green. And there was international tourists there. And when I asked them, why is the swimming pool green? Because it's not a very pretty, nice picture to go to a swimming pool. And it was nearly 40 degrees there in Kalahari. And they said, no, they haven't got chemicals to. And I find that, you know, very, very, you know, I didn't believe it. It can't be like that. You've got a swimming pool, you know it's raining. You have to have the chemicals. But it's the perception that is there from the tourist side. Well, the Kalahari is an international destination. First of all, you can't get there. Because the road is in such a bad state. If you come from the South African side, from the Namibian side, they grade that road every week. It's just a pleasure to drive there. But to get to Kalahari, you battle to get there with a 4x4, and it's an international destination. But then you get, you are now there, by the grace of God. You've got the four wheels still there, steering wheel, you went into the gate, they want to go to the swim. It's 40 degrees, and you can't swim because you're too scared, you're not sure there's crocodiles in the swimming pool, although there is no crocodiles in Khalakhan. But the point I want to make here is the staff there does not give about the people. They just go through their daily routine. If you want to show them, they're just going to... also, people were in the ablution block. There was a light that was fused or flickering for 2 days. I asked her, why did you keep up the light? So that's not my job. It's that sort of attitude. What happened to the principle of Bhakti prayer? And I know these are not the employees of the department itself, but of Sam Parks. Now this, I want to relate to my visit to Kruger National Park some time ago. You can see what is happening. Now, that to me is, what the Sand Park and the department doing to the most part of better? To me, it seems to be just a little thing that they got on the wall there to as a decoration, but they don't live by the principles of part of better. And I think that is going to cost us tourism. And I hope the tourism people are listening. Please go to Khalakhani, don't fly over, go in there. To see what's going on there. It is not a very good experience. Then, my last question, I listened to the budget, and the budget looks very good. It is progressing, increasing over the MTF period. And there seems to me things are growing, they are really looking. But I want to come back to this business unusual thing. Through this presentation today, not one of them convinced me that we are talking about business as unusual, business as usual. Can I just, and I'm asking the people in the department to tell me what is so unusual about this year's strategy and the budget, so that I can be sure that it's not business as usual. Yes, and then I have something for tourism. Yeah. On the presentation, page 12 of the department, they say they're tourism and sport development. I understand that. But in their annual report, they say that the key challenge in South Africa is yet going to broadening the participation in various sectors, the transformation of the tourism sector is that a key outcome. I didn't see it this year in the strategy. Because to me, the tourism industry is still controlled by the major players. I haven't seen any new players coming through. As big players, I'm not talking about the B&B and the small tourism operators. What is tourism getting doing to look at this? But I still see that it is sponsored tourism, the Atlas people, and there's nobody coming through on that. So that is my concern. Again, it relates to business unusual. This is business as usual.
Thank you, Chair President. If it's correct, I've seen business unusual. One other year, department did come here and we were asking why are they having so much on administration. And then they've told us that we must not forget that even the rates are contributing when they are doing their work, accommodation, transportation. I'm reading one of these documents saying that the department is planning a 2 million efficiency saving from traveling. But my question is that, are you not compromising an administrative work just because we have asked that question and now we are saving in about 2 million? I'm seeing a business as unusual, but with a question mark that, are you not now compromising your administrative work because you want to save 2 million is too much? And when I'm looking the rates, this thing of rates and the bonds, transportation, but are you convinced that you really are you planning to save that? And then how are you going to save and do with that 2 million in your savings and subsistence? I'm not sure we weren't briefed with this thing of tourism. I'm seeing this department, if you can look at my back, this is the department. I'm seeing the department, really department. And I'm believing that these are people who have traded skills. But when we are immediately saying that we are appointing a consultant to do a grading, can't you do yourself in your department? I know that this department does have expertise. It's one of the departments that when you are presenting, you must listen very carefully. That's because each and every department or section, you do have a lot of expertise. Can't you save your department money that inside the department there must be those people who are doing e-grading instead of taking e-consultants? I'm not against consultants, but when I'm looking at this department with so much persons, I'm saying persons, you know why I'm saying that. I was reading, you know, the way that you were first, I can't tell you which page. How is the department addressing the high turnover rate, which recently decreased from 25% to around 20%, particularly of your senior managers? Does this affect performance and service delivery, is it not? Do you have talented recruited staff retention strategies? Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Watson.
Thank you, Chair. You can't tell somebody a back for you. Not just a book full, but a back for. You me glad I was in glad the one topic that has been coming up ever since I've been part of this cluster is the question of road signs and roads. Now, my colleague has, as usual, touched on the Kalahari one. But all over the country, to our tourist destinations, we still have a problem of roads, and I'd like to know what the interaction of the department is with the bottom of the road and the various provinces. And then also it says that they've established structures for the implementation of tourism road signage. Now, it has improved, I must admit, but we still have road signage which, instead of guiding tourists, confuse them. Evidently, just a while ago, I traveled on the road from the Alberton Way towards Oatambo Airport. And in the one road alone, it said Oatambo. And next time it said Jansmuts, and it was sort of green board, Jansmuts Airport. And then it was Oatambo again, and then it said Johannesburg International Airport. If I hadn't followed the aircraft on the road,
what?
This is to me, if you come to this company and you don't know the OR is the initials of the late Mr. Tambo, you think it says you must have a choice. Either Johannesburg Airport or Tambo or maybe these things I think are crucial for our religion. They don't know if they're going to qualify me that they're listening in Petersburg or vice versa. The thing must be straightened and be in line with the maps that are to the service. And also, you know, if you come from the south and you take the best route to the Kruger National Park, you invariably land on the worst roads in the country. And it's taken so long to fix that. A second short one, Chair, the issue of the elephant research program. It just says here on page 14, the one of the KPIs is research and the support of innovation, it's a sustainable use of biodiversity, and one of the targets is the elephant research program Rona. Now, again, for years now we've been hearing about elephants, and at last we now have to call them, despite the outcry from people who don't understand management of the nature. And I just want to know what the program entails. Maybe it's part of the items that are hidden under the iceberg. The tip of the iceberg that was telling us about that. But I'd like to know more. And then, Chair, where did I read it? Yes, one of the bold air quality management systems is to reduce to 27 metros and district municipalities that do not meet ambient air quality standards from 29. You know, I don't think that's something to brag about, to reduce from 29 to 27. What about the other 27? Are they being tackled? Because, you know, air quality is one of our biggest problems in this whole global warming problem that we have. And lastly, I can't find the paper over there now, but I noticed that one of the key performance areas in line with our energy crisis is to get the stakeholders to, I'm not sure whether it's the MMEs or whatever, to reduce the energy used by 20%, but later on the department claim itself was only reduced by 5%. Shouldn't you lead by example? You're asking the stakeholders to reduce by 20%, and yet the apartment only is reduced by 5%. The balance is not 5%.
Thank you. Then you may be prepared fool. Let me allow the department to empty the bed before you.
Honorable Chair, I'm going to ask my colleagues to deal with some of the questions. The question from Honorable Mr. Van Rooyen, promotion on food security, infrastructure development and rehabilitation of parks will be taken by Mr. Zuluma. And then the one on unfunded mandate will be dealt with an SME entrepreneur by Sandy and Mr. Chris Wills. And then the question on financial responsibility, strategic objectives, and goals from Honorable Member Van Rooyen. I will deal with that, and let me just answer that quickly, Chair. And yes, in respect of what was highlighted in our report in 2006-07, those concerns have been addressed. What we've done, Honourable Members, we did a risk management plan for the whole organisation, and some of the issues that came out of the audit were included in the risk plan, and therefore our audit plan for the last financial year then was taking into account those issues. I would give an example around, there was a question on NEMA compliance, and some of the reporting against targets, and our organizational performance management and policy, all of those have been dealt with, and I can confirm that some of the difficult areas were also related to our implementation of the MSP, which is the Master Systems Plan. We did not have a Master Systems Plan at the time, and it was approved in the last financial year, and it was implemented. So I can give you that assurance. And then in respect of the question on the tar road and Galagadi, the 70 kilometers versus 20 kilometers, when will it be finished? And Mr. Defran Skalbeck will deal with that. And on Batupi, the question around Mata and Pierre Field in respect of the swimming pools in Sydney from Sandparks, will deal with that. And what is it that is business unusual and in respect of what we are presenting, I would ask SA Tourism to also respond to that, Mr. Musola, and the question on transformation of the tourism sector. And then on administration, in respect of the compromise, Honorable Member Rulani, I think that we are trying to have savings, and it is also something that's been demanded by Treasury in terms of the fiscal discipline within the public service, and therefore those savings will go to Treasury. I think in a nutshell that would be my answer. I do say that also, Honourable Member, I think your concern is also our concern. We are very tight on our budget. But we'll try and make do with what we have, and we would be happy to have more, but with less we can still do something. And then in respect of the issue of outsourcing the grading investigation, evaluation, Ms. Kunene, can you deal with that? The fact that we have capacity within our organization and the public entities. And the turnover rate and retention strategy, and I would ask Mr. Isham Abada to deal with it. And the questions from the Honourable Member Watson, road signage and tourism destinations, I would ask Ms. Kumayo to deal with that. And then on elephant research program, let me say that I would ask Sydney to respond, but maybe members are aware that the norms and standards for elephant management were approved by MINMEC, and also the minister published them earlier this year in February, and they've come into effect. And one of the methods, the menu of methods in terms of how elephant populations can be managed, one of them is translocation, contraception, and even considering culling, there was an indication that we need a lot of research work to be undertaken in respect of the other methods like contraception, and that work is work that we are doing in partnership with Sandy, and maybe Sandpass can also give an answer to that, but basically, that program is definitely underway, and it's included in our current program and is funded through Sandy. And then in respect of the ambient air quality standards, whether we're reducing enough, if we're focusing only on reducing by 2, as well as the energy efficiency reduction, I'll ask Ms. Yawich to answer the question. Thanks. And we can start with Andrew, then Enrique.
Thank you, DG. Honourable Member. The third question is food security. We have just completed the implementation of 40 gardens, 900 beneficiaries, of which over 400 of the women have received the certified training. We've also submitted a tender through the Flemish program to look for further funding to continue with the food security program. In terms of infrastructure development, we completed our infrastructure development on track this year to budget. We also have a further 30 million rand worth of infrastructure development funding for this current financial year. The question around rehabilitation is proceeding on track. We've removed now successfully over 15,000 hectares of plant and gum plantations. The rehabilitations on the eastern shore is now in a stage where it's ready follow-up. We've also dealt with a lot of unwanted infrastructure such as roads and that in the westerns where they've been taken out. On the western shore, there are still about 1,000 hectares of gum trees to remove, and we are in the first phase of rehabilitating what is now New Park. Our big success story in this financial year has been the demolishing of what was the Hell's Gate military base, where we've moved over 12,000 tons of rubble. That equates into about 7,500 cubic meters of buildings, which included asbestos. The key buildings there with historic value we have kept because they have interpretation value, and we have secured from Treasury through deep intervention on our MTF bottom line ongoing budget for the Western Shore. Obviously, with rehabilitation, it's how long is a piece of string? It's a little bit like marketing, and it is always more funding needed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. I mean, if you look at the whole issue of how are the priorities for this year relating to business as usual, we have taken the whole list of the APEX, which is really coming out of the presidency, and as the president really put it in his budget speech, to make sure that all the department's programs are aligned. Those that are not, we really make sure that they are aligned, in fact, even from an allocation of resources, to be able to take that into account. So we have really taken that to heart, and I really want to put you to remember that we have taken that very, very seriously in terms of making sure that we are aligned to
That's not a question.
Notwithstanding the fact that this budget cycle started a year ago, so you were able to adjust. We have been able to really adjust in terms of doing that. One of the practical implementation of that, just to give you an essence, was on the whole question of economic diplomacy, which is why now you have about four or five government departments, DTI, DIT, GCIS, running a big program in China this year. And it's really about making sure we're pushing one of the APEX, which is containing the APEX program. So we really have taken that to heart. In terms of the BEE and the transformation in the tourism industry, I will agree with the members, and we continue to say that. Even at Indaba this year, we're very, very clear that the transformation in the tourism industry continues to be shallow and continue to be slow. Having said that, Chairperson, I think there's some really, really things that we need to take into account, which have happened, which I think are quite positive. The biggest hotel group in South Africa, outside of Sun Parks, which is Southern Sun, it is now in black hands. 51% of it is owned by HCI. And members who have achieved that in the first 10 years, I think it's something that we should look at. Torvest is by far the largest tourism integrated services company. It's worth $2.3 billion at the last check. Just last month, Torvest has been bought by a consortium called Guma. which is will be effectively controlling 52% of Torvest. That is very important. The implications of that will only be felt in the next 3 to 5 years. And I think it's a very, very important thing. The City Lodge Group has just sold 22% of it. And these now are big companies in our country and the tourism industry. Sun International, 18%. And of course, we know that the Don Suite is about 60% black owned. The challenge, our members, it is at the small, medium enterprises. Tourism industry is 80% small, medium enterprise. And really where the challenge is at, it is really where the work of the Tourism Empowerment Council of South Africa is going to have to focus on, to make sure that we continue to increase opportunities for small and medium enterprises. I think the Parliament is going to be quite helpful for us. Next year, 2009, is a very important year, because it is the first year of reporting. We launched the Empowerment Charter, Tourism Empowerment Charter, in 2005. And we said after 4 years, which is 2009, companies must come and report. That is where Parliament is going to have to name and to shame people who have not responded to the call. And we are doing everything now to make sure that we prepare well for next year through the TEXA and to ensure that we continue to take some of the concerns into account. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you.
terms, I'll just respond to the two questions that were raised, one around working for Wetland and the SME. What happens with these programs is they have various projects within that program, and there are certain targets which are set at number of people employed, number of SMEs used, number of SMEs created. My understanding where this was worded was the number of SMEs employed. So I assume that this is the number of small contractors that would be used to assist in those projects, the rehabilitation of workmen. Around the unfunded mandate, SANBI is now, I think it's about 3.5 years old in its new form, responding to the Biodiversity Act member. And I think as we've sort of, with the new CEO, we've been tackling the, trying to implement the demands of the International Biodiversity Act. Things that I can sort of mention are the expansion of the organization into the animal taxonomy and systematic, new bioregional programs which we're setting up in different parts of the country, the expansion of the national network of conservation gardens, which would incorporate traditional conservation estates, marine and freshwater biodiversity programs, climate change, there's a large focus on climate change, is support coming from DEET, and which is very valuable. But I think, you know, we can probably absorb a lot more funding in various programs within the organization. GMO research program, national biodiversity research strategy. A lot of the biodiversity products that we are generating as a sort of knowledge, biodiversity knowledge leader within the country, those all require additional resources. And one of the sort of key infrastructural developments that we've been looking at developing is a natural history collection facility, which will display, based up in Pretoria, essentially the taxonomic collection of a nice sort of museum of natural history, very similar to the model of the British Museum of Natural History, where we can showcase to the public on the biodiversity, unique biodiversity of this country.
Thank you, Jack. That's just on the Kalahari Road. I think just to sort of put the perspective that this project was developed as a joint venture with the Provincial Department of Transport, and it was developed over a funding period of almost two MTF periods. Up to now, they completed 30 kilometers, and the expected date for completion will be March 2009. Which will coincide with the completion of the entry gate at Tweede Vuren. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, in regard to Batapili, it's inexcusable. We would like to find ourselves, particularly in Kalahari, of good service. Kalahari is in the top three, in fact, it's the third highest occupancy level accommodation place in some parks. So it is, in fact, as I was saying, unacceptable. And this relates to supervisory work and walkabout by supervisors and managers, and we shall take that up. The fact that there were no chemicals is not an excuse as well, because they've got a budget to manage those issues. Just to indicate what we're doing into the future, we are in the current year anticipating the development of our own tourism and hospitality training academy, which will address service issues amongst others, because that's a critical aspect in this regard. Let me now move on to the elephant management program. Even though it's not as per sequence, but because I'm on the clock currently. As the acting DG has indicated, there are a number of options within the norms and regulations. It is important that as an organization, in parks where we do have elephants, that we take the right alternatives for that specific park. And one of those areas that the acting DG had not mentioned is the ability for the parks to create what we call impact zones, particularly in a bigger park like Kruger National Park. so that whale is less damaging impact that elephants can make, that we zone those areas where we can ensure that elephants roam pretty freely there. But in other high impact areas, that we do actually look at speedier ways of resolving the populations in those areas. As you know, elephants are a very big determinant or a big influencing effect on the ecosystem wherever they are. And so we need to be comfortable at the time that we take a specific option that the proper management aspects have been accounted for. Thanks.
Chair, to the question of why the grading council needs to appoint consultants and why we cannot do the review ourselves. At the outset, I'd like to just mention that the grading council only has 10 employees. I'm the 11th person. I've got a marketing manager, a finance manager, operations with other members of the team. We have also 72 assessors across the country, but they are actually contractors to the grading council. They do not, they're not employed by the grading council. The review that needs to be conducted is a comprehensive review of the tourism grading council as it stands, as a business model. It's important to look at the legislative environment, to look at institutional arrangements, the actual business model, funding arrangements. There are particular skills required to conduct this body of work, Mr. Chair. That includes legal experience, finance experience, business process experience. Skills that nobody at the grading council has at this point. And also, in particular, looking at the time frames, considering that we have to report back to MINMEC on the 20th. So based on the lack of relevant skills internally, as well as the time frames and the depth of work that needs to be conducted, and most importantly, DEET is actually funding the consultants that are conducting the work to assist us. So, yeah.
I will respond on the question related to road signage, and I would like to take this opportunity to agree with the member that there is indeed a problem with regards to standardization of tourism signage in South Africa. And it is for this reason on our business plan for this year, one of our focus areas would be to develop a framework for signing tourism attractions in South Africa, which would be the first ever initiative that will enable us to define what a tourism signage is and how it should link up with maps and also information centers. And that process is underway, and we hope and trust that it will help us to provide leadership to different spheres of government and will also make it easier for tourists to navigate our beautiful country. Thank you.
I'll address the issue of the energy efficiency target. Honourable members, it is a road target, but I just want to add that we've already started with most of the recommendations by DM in terms of the light bulbs and that kind of thing. Our constraint in this particular instance is that we, in a leased building, we did indicate that one of our targets was a new deep building. We will be using a lot more energy efficient means, using natural rainwater, lighting, that kind of thing in terms of energy efficiency. But at the moment, we are on a lease with the landlord, and it's a bit difficult in terms of that. So looking to the future, we will be a lot more efficient in that regard. The second issue was around recruitment and retention strategies. That's also a particular area of difficulty in government because a lot of our officials are very mobile in a sense. But I mean, the department has looked at both non-financial and financial incentives to actually retain staff. I mean, amongst the things we do is bursaries, we train staff internally. We also look into the future in terms of partnerships with institutions and actually creating a pool of skills for ourselves. Then also, I think there's this realization in government as well that we need to retain our skills. The OSD program, they've just recently completed in terms of
the legal personnel, they're looking at scientists and engineers and that type of thing as well. I think a lot that's going to help in that regard is also that we now have a new performance management system that we're going to be implementing based on the balanced scorecard system. So we're hoping that all these initiatives by the department will assist with the recruitment and retention. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'll deal with the question on equality. And I think there are two parts to the answer. The first is, and I think it's been an underlying theme of some of the responses, which is that there's an issue around how much money we have and therefore how much you can do. And I think our department has received an increase in funds up to a point, but we're now reaching the point where that money is absorbed and we aren't getting in anymore. So I think that in relation to the air quality targets, we have managed with the funds that we have available to buy the air quality monitoring stations for two areas, for the Highveld area, which is a very big airshed, which is probably the second worst area of air quality in the country, and for the Vaal area, which is the worst. And what we've done is to concentrate on getting the equipment into those areas, because in order to be able to reduce the ambient quality, you've got to be able to know what it is. So you've got to be able to buy air quality monitoring equipment, you've got to install that equipment, you've got to measure, and then you've got to be able to set those targets and put the interventions in place. With the funds available, we've been able to do that for two areas. However, there are a number of other metros in particular around the country that out of their own funds have started to purchase air quality equipment and are starting to work with us in ensuring that that spread is increased across the country. And that includes the Johannesburg Metro, the Cape Town Metro, and eThekwini Metro. We are hoping, in our MTF submission this year, we'll go back to Treasury and again ask for the resources in order to be able to increase that network, but the target really is something that is informed by the amount of money that we've been allocated to put in the necessary infrastructure in order to be able to do the work. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Air quality. You want to make a follow-up?
Yes, Ashinja, just a couple of further questions. But let me first start with the Kalahari. I'm not satisfied with this answer that it will be finished by next year. Because that I heard 3 years ago, and the next year. My request to the department is, to please talk to their provincial counterparts. Because that road, the chairperson, is bad. The people are driving through, because you're next to the Botswana border. They're driving on the Botswana side to avoid the South African side. And they're avoiding the current road and driving next to the road. And I saw this in Kenya when I went from Nairobi to Nakuru. The road got so bad that the people don't even ride on the road, use the road, they're driving next to the road. And if it's an international destination, we are proud of ourselves to that this is the transfrontier spot. But you can't get there. People are crying when they get to the next place. They're so glad that they got there in one piece. So I'm joking about it, but please, something must be done to that road, because it is not suitable, and most of our tourists is not driving with 4x4s, they are renting small little cars. If you see the road in the park, I must say, it's fine, but it's to get there. So if the department can talk to the Northern Trade department, I think the commercial in Kalahari or something like that, the tourists, do something about it, because it is really bad. But I want to come back to the weather people. letter before the annual review that I got there. There's some very interesting reading there on the funding model. They say that there's a healthy debate, not just in South Africa, but globally, about the most suitable funding model applicable for weather agencies that supply public goods and commercial services. Currently, South Africans align more to the European, Europe-Japan model. However, stakeholders are still to achieve consensus on the respective funding model. Have we achieved that? Has that been done? Are we now sure which model are we using in terms of can I just explain to us which model are they talking about? Then also in the Spain report they were talking of the upgrading of infrastructure for the weather based has that been done? Is there sufficient funds available in this financial year to do that? Jefferson, the last comment that last week we briefed our provinces on the waste management problem. Now, one of the questions that we asked in the provincial department in the Free State was, have you got the capacity to implement and do that? The answer that we got is no. They haven't approved the microstructure, they approved the macrostructure. But they haven't approved the microstructure, so there is no capacity. And it relates to the air quality. So my concern is we are pushing through all these legislations. I think the problem is to deal with this. I'm not saying, what are we going to deal with that? Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the swimming pool, the answer was it's not acceptable, and it's not acceptable that there are no chemicals. I can't believe that. Then the people who are placed there, they have a very serious problem. They ignore everything, they don't bother what it happened to the entire tourism. I don't think they belong there. Because if the budget is not a question, why are they not having chemicals? Are they lazy to do the work? Or to hire somebody to do the work? We don't understand what you say in this document. Which means you will do the monitoring when the committee has complained. It is how you do things and you think it's number three on what? You know, I cannot understand that. You are the people to carry the blame. You are not doing the work accordingly. You are the people to safeguard our faith in the world. But if people just sit there and the swimming pool is green, I cannot understand this. This leaves much to be desired. It says a lot. It means there are many other things that you are not being careful of. I can't believe that. You want to come in again?
I'm sorry, Jefferson, I have to leave for another meeting on this leave policy. It is very important for us members. But I would like to the response to these questions of mine to be recorded so that I can. Unfortunately, I have to leave.
You want to have the response?
No, if I can somebody record it so that I can have it. Because I would like to be here and ask more questions, but I have to go.
Okay. Yeah, in fact, there are many more questions. On the air quality and the air pollution, I'm struggling with this on that. Yesterday evening, I phoned, I forget the name of the station, you gave it to me. The cell phone rings, takes message, it never comes back to me. I'm not satisfied. I don't know who to fight then, but I have to fight the department. This person seems not to be belonging there as well. You know, we cannot go for a salary at the end of the month, and we don't make mistakes with that. But when we have to serve the people on the ground, our cell phones are ringing and ringing, and we don't even go back to the person who was voting. I don't accept that. I will request Johan to take it up. Because the people in Victoria Hotel, they are on my neck. They want to know what is happening, because the pollution is appalling. Our members want to have to... I'm having too many questions. I don't want to speak.
I have two questions also. The first one is the financial indicator that is related with additional responsibilities to environmental management inspector as in the Environmental Laws Amendment Bill from the department tells us the implications. And then the second one is to establish if there are any provisions made for better training and equipping the environmental management inspector. Because we realize that the crime, the environmental crime is just so high. And all the cases that have been on the table, only a few have
climate change related research. Where are we? Very short question. And maybe the last one is the EIA application information call center. I'm also interested to know where are we with the EIA, because it is indeed a standing block. Maybe we try those and give other questions.
Chair, can I ask? To answer the question on the Euro-Japan funding model, what is our model? And then Joanne to immediately follow and deal with the way it's been questioned to implement and also as it relates to FIDT. And our not responding to calls. Environmental inspectors and the financial implications of the NEMA Amendment Bill. And then the training of the EMIs and the conviction rate question. Then Cindy will talk on the B scorecard, the compliance issue, and the fact of it being a bottom system. And then youth women and people with disabilities, how are they being helped, and the implementation of learnerships and skills training, DEC, to handle that in the depth of Cindy. And then we get to deal with the question on SA as an effective destination, and then what? Climate change is later, then EIA will also be dealt with by Joe. And then, thank you, Honourable Member. To respond on the question on the funding model, indeed, the different water services throughout the world, they use different models. For example, the UK, all their activities are 100% funded by government. And if you look at Europe, I think South African Water Service has been looking at the model that has been used by those countries. For example, if you look at the UK, around 75% of the funding comes from government, and the other 25% is coming from the commercial revenue. And if you look at South African Water Service, our projection at the moment, our model is that commercial services is around 32%, and government is around 68%. You will note, Honourable Members, that with the projections, we are projecting close to 50-50. One other interesting model that is also the New Zealand model, where commercial is above 50%. However, with that model, the research is actually not funded by government. It's under different, it's not part of their commercial activity. So South African Water Services at the moment, we're using where we have as an organization to come up with our own revenue, and the other revenue is still coming with government. Looking at upgrading of the infrastructure, honourable members, we have the projections. We will thank our government for providing us with 240 million rand to upgrade the Rajas, and that the project is progressing well as planned. And also from our own revenue, from the commercial revenue, members, on slide now, the second last slide, we are projecting that we will be spending some money. 2809, around 80 million rands, in upgrading our automatic radar stations and also the rain stations and water boys and the other networks that we need, and also putting some of the money in terms of the research.
Okay, thank you. I think that there were a number of questions asked about the environmental fund function that relate to the funding of the function, and there's two things that I wanted to start with. The first is that environment constitutionally is a concurrent function of provincial and national. What that means is the provinces have to budget for environment. It's not a case of national government saying this is a discretionary matter. It is constitutionally the provinces must in fact ensure that there is an environmental function in the way that they allocate their budget and that is funded. Secondly, in relation to the waste bill, in 1994, when the division of functions happened between national and provincial governments, in fact, 90% of the waste functions were assigned to the provinces in terms of that division. And I think that what has happened is that because of financial pressures, what has happened over the last 15 years is that in actual fact the provinces haven't done a number of the functions that were allocated to them. When we wrote the waste bill, what we took into account was the fact that the provinces, because they didn't take up what were their allocated legal responsibilities, are sitting in a situation where a number of them don't have the adequate capacity to run the function properly. And so we wrote the waste bill in such a way that there are only two things in it that provinces have to do. And one of them they do. The first thing that they need to do is to do an integrated waste management plan. And everybody agreed across the country, all the provinces agreed that that is something that they need to do and that they want to do. In terms of money, it's a relatively small thing to be able to do that plan. The second thing is that the licensing of general waste sites in the legislation has been allocated to the provinces. Hazardous waste sites remain with national government. But with the general waste sites, the provinces already do the environmental impact assessments for those waste sites, which is an existing function that is funded, and the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry issues a record of decision for the water side of it. The landfill permit is therefore largely a combination of the ROD for the EIA and the ROD that DWAS issues in relation to water. So in fact, the additional is small. What we then did from national government was to say, even in relation to that, we would put in place a whole lot of interventions. So we have developed a training program for provincial officials on landfill permitting, and we've run that program twice already. We'll be running it another couple of times in the coming year. The second thing that we've done is that we have gone to the European Union with a funding proposal for money to be able to build the capacity of provincial and municipal officials around waste management. And we're quite optimistic that we're going to get funding, and that will then enable us to put in a much bigger training program for both provinces and municipalities. And the third thing is that we agreed that the current backlog in permitting of landfill sites is something that we would not ask the provinces to do, that we would fund ourselves and do ourselves nationally. So the provinces would need to deal with new applications, but anything that is old and that is existing, we would do. So I think that in our view, we've written the bill. There's a lot of things in the bill. But if you read that bill, it says the MEC may. And there are only two things that the provinces really must do. And then we've given a menu of options that will allow them over time, as their capacity increases and their funds increase, to be able to take on more of those functions. In air quality, the air quality function, I mean, I'm sure those of you who are here when the air quality bill was passed will know that the bill is, the actual licensing function of the bill is something that goes over to municipalities in the medium term. And we have worked with provinces, but the licensing, the actual funding of the licensing, is going to be a municipal function. And again, the provincial side of it is largely a planning, monitoring, and oversight of municipalities in carrying out that function. In relation to the service delivery issues, I will engage with Reverend Moatsi. As far as I know, there is work being done, including I've seen drafts of a directive to the company in question. So I think that I apologize for the lack of communication, but work is happening. Now on the funding implications of the amendment bill, there are no funding implications of the amendment bill because it is a set of technical amendments in relation to work that is already being done. Again, in relation to the establishment of the EMI inspectorate, when we passed the original amendment bill that established the inspectorate, we agreed with provinces that for the first 3 years, all the costs of it would be, apart from the personnel costs in the province, would be borne nationally. So all of the training up until now, all of the meetings up until now, including the provision of uniforms to the province, has been something that has been bought by the national department. And there was an agreement with the provinces that from this year they would then budget for that to be taken over by the provinces. In relation to the training, it is entirely up to the training course is now a UNISA, is a course that is being run by UNISA and one of the tertiary institutions in the Western Cape as a distance learning course, and it is up to the provinces over time to decide how many of their staff they actually are going to accredit. We are also starting from this year to open that training to officials in municipalities, and a number of municipalities have indicated to us that they want to put their officials on the course, so we're going to see EMI at a municipal level, and I think that what we're then going to do is to need to ensure that you are getting good cooperation between the provincial and the municipal officials. Most of these investigations, the big ones, are done as a team anyway. You're getting national, provincial, and municipal government working together, and in that way we're also increasing and enhancing our capacity. In terms of the climate science, we have worked with the Department of Science and Technology, who have developed a climate change research and development strategy for the country. And they are at the moment rolling that out. They have called together all of the different research institutions and scientists around the country who do climate science and have determined a set of national priorities. And they are working with that network of scientists, including the people from the South African National Biodiversity Institute and the Weather Services are part of that network to ensure then that there is government direction that is given to the way that the science happens in a range of institutions, the CSIR, the Agricultural Research Council, the Water Research Commission, the different universities and the contributions that the universities need to make, as well as our own thing, into a comprehensive science strategy for the country. And I'm quite certain that DST would be very happy to come and actually present it, or we could present it together with them. In terms of the EIA, the department has a call center. And what we have established working with the provinces over the last couple of years is something called the National Environmental Database that has been set up, which all the provinces, we developed it nationally, and all of the provinces have got it. And what it should allow them to be doing is to enter every single EIA onto that system, including when it came in, what the status is, when it's concluded, whether there's been an appeal or not. What we are discovering is that the problem is that the entry of that information onto that system is not happening consistently across all the provinces. Some of the provinces have been very good in keeping that system up to date and keeping it running, and you can get good information out of it. Other provinces are not entering the information, and so you do have an information problem at that level, but we are working with them on that issue. And just on the backlog, I mean, we put 25 million rand into the provinces over the last year in order to help them to deal with their EIA application backlog. Again, some of the provinces cleared their backlog, Northwest cleared their backlog. The Free State made very good progress. The Western Cape made pretty good progress, but some of the provinces have not cleared it as much as we would have hoped. So I think that really, and I think it must be, in terms of the NCOP mandate, the issue of how you then deal with differing budgets, differing capacity, and differing approaches to environment provincially is something that really we grapple with as much as I'm sure you do in this committee. Thank you. I will respond on the question related to why is transformation of the sector not compulsory. And I think I need to mention to the honourable member that the reality of the matter is that transformation in South Africa is governed by the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act, which falls under DTI, and all sectors have to comply with that. And the Act makes transformation not compulsory. And it also has regulations under which I think might have unintended consequences on the sector. Because in terms of the regulations, if your business has a turnover of less than 5 million, you're totally exempted from complying with the charter. Between 5 and 35, then you have to comply with 4 of the 7 indicators. 35 million and above, you have to comply with all the indicators. And the reality of the matter is that our sector, 90% of the industries are small. So automatically, the bulk of the industry is exempted from compliance with the charter, and you cannot challenge the act that is in place which we have to operate under. But what we do in return is that we focus on saying that business cannot continue as usual among smaller players. And our strategy in partnership with CAFSA is to ensure that we communicate the benefits of transformation to the industry. And we encourage the industry to be responsible citizens and embrace transformation and change and do the right thing for the country. We also focus on using our levers that will compel them to transform, like procurement, etc. But I must say, we are trying our best to make sure that we communicate so that they can buy in. And we hope and trust that come 2017, when transformation is going to be reviewed, we will be in a position to review the status of compulsory or versus non-compulsory, and we'll be able to take decisions. But at this point in time, this is the house that governs how we have to implement transformation in our sector. Thank you.
Thank you. going to deal with the two. The first one, the question about training and how it's benefiting. Originally, the Expanded Public Works Program earmarked 5% of the project budget to be used for training. The department, however, has embarked on a process where we've separated the training by non-accredited and accredited training. So basically, non-accredited training is done through the project implemented, while accredited training is done via the service providers. Those accredited training are approved skills program related to the projects, which are FAQA approved, and therefore the officials or the people working in the project that are being trained receive the necessary certificates. So, and I think that just to sort of mention that during the last financial year, 137,000 person days were spent on accredited training within DEET and 47,000 on unaccredited. As far as the process of or the criteria that's applicable, and then we're talking about disabilities, youth and women, criteria is applied that are recognized throughout the Expanded Public Works Program around local people to be used on the project, women to be used, and I can say that the majority of our projects are exceeding the norms on the local people, women and disabilities, which also includes then the youth. And then, as the acting DJ referred in a presentation, the department has also earmarked funds in this financial year and the next financial year, which forms part of the National Youth Services Program that are led by the Presidency, in which we will be training youth in this coming financial year 500 and the next one 500 around specific skills that are linked to the line functions of this department. And then perhaps it's unfortunate that Mr. Van Rooyen has left. Perhaps just to state that in the beginning part of the Kalahari project, it was labor intensive. And in that project, we've established certain SMMEs, of which I can also state that two of those SMMEs who started with the labor intensive project have now become contractors who won tenders working in the Northern Cape province for building roads. So I think the value is not only to get the new roads there, but also to sort of create competencies around SMMEs. Thank you.
I think I wouldn't want us to respond now further on the issue of structural building in respect of what was referred to as unacceptable in respect of maintaining the swimming pool in one of our national parks. I would say that we will look at investigating the matters and really take action. It is definitely not because of lack of commitment from management. However, we do take responsibility that if something like that happens, it is definitely unacceptable and we investigate and take appropriate action.
Many people are out. I've discovered, unlike the previous year that I was in the parliament, yesterday I went into town three times, and people approaches you and say, I am hungry. Three different people approached me. It said the Lord to me, for the past 14 years, I have never experienced something like that. I've experienced it. And when a person comes to you and says, I'm hungry, it means something is there. And therefore, that leaves much to be desired. We are challenged with things like that. And so let's wish you all of the best and hard work in this. Thank you.
The other one with the red car, the Tulan.
Lucky today.